The first planes carrying aid have arrived in Tonga after Saturday's devastating natural disasters. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. A tsunami triggered by an underwater volcanic eruption off the coast of the Pacific nation flattened villages and farmland, killing at least three people and causing catastrophic property damage over the weekend. Today, military aircraft from New Zealand, Australia, and Japan are delivering urgently needed clean water, food, medicine, electricity generators, and communications equipment. As recovery efforts ramp up on the island, thousands of miles away in Peru, the government is also grappling with what it says is its worst ecological disaster in years. Tonga's volcanic eruption led to an oil spill at a seaside refinery on South America's western coast on Saturday. The BBC's Leonardo Roca reports Peruvian officials say the company that owns the facility must do more to help the cleanup efforts.
This spill happened when a tanker offloading oil into the Pampilla refinery was hit by strong waves generated by the eruption thousands of kilometers across the Pacific Ocean. It was initially seen as an unfortunate accident caused by the tsunami, but the Peruvian Foreign Ministry has now issued a statement saying that the Spanish energy company, Repsol, must pay for the environmental damage and the loss of income of fishermen and others who live in the affected area near Lima. Repsol says it has employed hundreds of people, including pollution experts, and has sent all the equipment required to remove the crude oil from the sea and the beaches.
That's the BBC's Leonardo Roca reporting there. To Geneva now, where the International Committee of the Red Cross says it's been the victim of a sophisticated cyber attack. Confidential information of more than 500,000 people has been stolen, forcing it to shut down the system it uses to trace missing people and reunite separated families. The BBC's Imogen Folks has more on that story.
Well, it's a big attack. This is data that has come from 60 different Red Cross delegations around the world, sent to International Committee of the Red Cross headquarters in Geneva, and then stored in a private company which the ICRC hired here in Switzerland to keep its data safe. Over 500,000 people. Now, these are some of the people who are really most vulnerable in wartime. People who are searching for missing loved ones who may have been disappeared during a war, been abducted during war. People who are imprisoned during war. The ICRC, as you know, visits detainees, tries to ensure their welfare, keeps their families informed of how they're doing. It tries to reunite missing families. So this can be very, very sensitive data. Now someone has got it. The Red Cross doesn't know who, it doesn't know why, but today it is appealing to whoever has got hold of this data. Please don't leak it. Please don't share it, because it really will cause even more harm and suffering to people who've already endured a great, great deal.
And this has raised concerns, not just of the sensitive Red Cross data itself, but also potentially who else the hackers might have targeted in Geneva, given meetings that will be taking place there later this week.
Well, that's absolutely right. Geneva is not a stranger to spying and also cyber attack. The United Nations main building in Geneva is being refitted at huge cost. One thing that's happening is an upgraded and highly secure IT system, because they know that they have been vulnerable to this kind of attack. We have enormous aid agencies like UN Human Rights who do all those sensitive inquiries into war crimes. They're based in Geneva, UN Refugees based in Geneva, and of course, the very sensitive diplomacy that takes place here. Just tomorrow, in fact, as we know, Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will be meeting. These are sensitive, sensitive conversations. Doesn't help if somebody else can get hold of their content who might manipulate it.
The BBC's Imogen Folks for us in Geneva. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
At the top of the next hour, the Turkish Central Bank will announce its latest rate decision. After four straight months of interest rate cuts, policymakers are expected to keep the benchmark rate at 14%. The country's currency, the lira, is down about 0.5% ahead of that announcement. Checking some other numbers. European benchmarks are little changed as investors keep tabs on rising geopolitical tensions. Hong Kong's Hang Seng jumped nearly 3.5% today, fueled by a decision from China's central bank to cut a key mortgage rate for the first time in almost 2 years. Well, are you one of the many people who started dabbling in financial market trading during the pandemic? While some say they do it just for fun or to earn a little bit of pocket money, critics say these new apps make it easy to trade and can feel like a game that encourages too much risk. The BBC's Rob Young has been taking a closer look at that.
There's been a rise in the number of people trading on the financial markets, many of them young, who haven't dabbled in stock or currency markets before. Nora Samir, who's a population child health researcher in Sydney in Australia, started trading at the beginning of the pandemic.
I love trading so much, especially cryptocurrencies. Crypto very much reminds me of games that I used to play online when I was younger. In the Real Investing app, I had some good experiences and some bad ones, but overall, I've made quite a lot of money, in which I've just gone shopping with, to be honest.
There are now many trading apps. One that's seen a surge in new global users is eToro.
Zero is good. Not that kind. Invest in stocks with zero commission. eToro.
Which was set up in Israel. The company's chief executive is Yoni Azia.
We've grown to a total of 27 million registered users on the platform globally. So customers today can download a mobile app and open an eToro account and fund it with $10 and then buy a fractional share of Tesla for $10. So that just increased the amount of people globally that can actually participate in the markets.
An academic who's given evidence to the US Congress on the issue says the various apps' game-like qualities can encourage people to take bigger risks.
And so they're not necessarily bad, but there is some regulation that I think could be beneficial.
Dr. Vicky Bogan specializes in behavioral economics at Cornell University in the US and who's been analyzing this so-called gamification.
To the extent that these platforms allow more people to engage with the markets and lower barriers to participation, I think that's a good thing. Where I think add some words of caution is in terms of how these apps are designed, in terms of triggering and pushing people to trade and engage in a way that's not optimal.
Regulators are taking a closer look. The US Securities and Exchange Commission will conduct an examination of the crop of new trading apps, and the UK's Financial Conduct Authority has launched a campaign to educate users. It seems likely that stricter rules will impact this growing industry. I'm the BBC's Rob Young for Marketplace.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.